Hey there, it's producer Scott, and this is the Neutral Cider Hotel podcast. Now, it's been a while since we went on hiatus. I think about 15 months ago was the last episode that rolled out, but I recently had the chance to travel to England for Gabe's wedding celebration. And while I was there, I had my recording equipment with me, and I took the opportunity to sit down with each of the guys, plus a couple cider makers, and check in and see how things are going in their worlds. So that's what you're going to hear all this week. Tomorrow, Tuesday, you are going to hear from James and Susanna from Little Pomona. On Wednesday, we sit down with Tom Oliver of Oliver Cider. Thursday, all the way from Anstruther, Scotland, it's Grant Hutchison. And wrapping up the week on Friday, yes, it's the man with the biggest, boldest laughter in all of podcasting. That's right, it's Martin Goodwin Sharman. But to start things off, today you are going to hear from the ciderologist himself, Mr. Gabe Cook. It was the day after his wedding celebration. I pulled him aside and we sat down and just had a lovely little conversation. We reflected on what he's been doing since the podcast went on hiatus. We also talked about what's going on in his life now, his view on cider and what's going on in the world of cider, even name-checked a couple ciders that he's had over the last year or so that he's really enjoyed. I think he threw in a conversation about tax because it's Gabe, and maybe got a book plug in there. I didn't have a bell ready though, so you'll have to do the ding for me. And I think we wrapped up with, or maybe we started off with a chat about the podcast and his views on it and how he wants to move forward. So here it is. It is a conversation with Gabe Cook. It is the Neutral Cider Hotel special check-in episode. English countryside, and I'm sitting down with Mr. Gabe Cook. We haven't done the podcast for a while, so I thought it'd be a good idea for us to check back with our stalwarty hosts and see how they're doing. So Gabe, start with, what have you been up to since the last time we recorded?
Well, producer Scott, what a joy. Just before we start, just to paint the scene, we're sat on a double bed. It's like a boudoir, surrounded by some toys and some children's books, which is not like me regressing. It's indicative of what I have been up to, which is having a baby, a little Etta that you've met. She's very cute. Just over a year now, a bit of a handful, not a bit of a handful, just a baby, which is a bit of a handful. And got married last September, and you're here because you participated in the big party that we had yesterday. So we had this little family wedding last year and a big ass party yesterday in the orchard, Broom Farm, the home of Rosselbois Cider and Perry Company. Drank lots of perry, lots of cider and some beer and some wine. And it was a pretty lush day. So it has been good, but you know, just reflecting on how the Neutral Cider Hotel started, which was lockdown, what do we do? Missing the pub, missing our friends. Let's do something online and all the joyousness that came from that. And then the cold, harsh reality of, you know, having to actually do some work and starting families. We started off with one baby, well, one and a half if you count Martin. And now there's three, and if I'm allowed to say so, one very imminent as well from Mr. Martin Goodwin Sharman as well. So really exciting, exceedingly busy times. But yeah, again, just to try and paint the scene, it's a late summer day. It's almost feels like the last days of summer. It's got that sort of color glint of early autumn, and nights are getting a bit more chill, but it's just beautiful sunlight. It's absolutely glorious. It's the Shire in full swing. Scott, this is your first time seeing this part of the world. What are your first impressions?
Well, firstly, it feels like I brought San Diego weather here. I don't know if it's the way it normally is, but it has been for at least definitely the 2 days that I've been out in the country here with you for your wedding celebration. Sunny, light breeze, like absolutely perfect, which is not necessarily what Britain is known for. So I think that's lovely. And your lovely wife, your child, her family, your family, everybody's been wonderful. So that's been a great experience. Now, I think I would be remiss if I didn't at least put the question out there, because I think a lot of people are asking. We get requests all the time to know kind of the fate. And I know we may not have a clear answer here, but I wanted to at least give you a chance to go through your mindset of what you think the future of the Neutral Cider Hotel is, as ambiguous as you can or want to be. But I think a lot of people are asking, and I know we've had internal conversations, but I thought I'm going to give each of the hosts a chance to at least share their thoughts and what happens moving forward.
Well, from my perspective, it very much feels like a period of hiatus rather than the end. What's been really interesting is that subsequent to, you know, the last of the sort of formal episodes finishing, there's been lots of events and activities in the UK and in Norway and the USA that I've attended. And the number of people who've come up to me and said, oh, I love the Neutral Cider Hotel. Thanks so much. It helped me learn more about cider, or I'm doing my CCP, which is like the US-based sort of cider sommelier training program. And they use that for research. Good luck in the test if that's your research. That's all I can say. And just generally kind of saying how much they enjoyed the show quite a long time after it has finished, which I suppose is the joy of the podcast, is that it lives in perpetuity, you know? And if I'm right in saying, rather coincidentally, just what, a couple of days ago, we had our 100,000th download, which is rather bonkers, I think, is the appropriate word to use there. How insane is that? So I think, as a demonstrative of what is sort of happening with cider, that there is this increased interest of people wanting to consume material and things that are trying to learn, but in the, dare I say, slightly irreverent way of the Neutral Cider Hotel, it's there. So yeah, the reason that there hasn't been any recently is not because we've said that we don't want to do it anymore. It is really just down to the fact that we're just so busy with work, babies, life, and everything that sort of comes in between. I'm personally still very keen to continue it in some guise. It might not be for a little bit. There might be the odd sporadic one. There might be a little burst of something here and there. You never know. We say we had like sort of big sort of wedding bash yesterday, and the lovely Screech Fest of Martin Gubensharman and lovely wife Hannah were there. And he expressed, maybe because he was a bit tiddly, that actually it wasn't tiddly at all. It's very unlike Martin. That you know, he's still keen. And well, I'm not going to speak for Grant, but yeah, it's not done. It's just time. So yeah, hang on in there. And dare I say, maybe we just need to do like a GoFundMe page or something. Like, how much are people willing to pay for the Neutral Cider Hotel to come back? Maybe, you know. We're all interested in earning money by gobbing off about cider. So I don't know. We'll see. But as far as I'm concerned, it's definitely not done yet. There are many, many more ciders and much more rubbish to talk about yet. So that's my hope anyway.
I know for a fact we could make at least 50p.
At least.
Okay. A quid. Oh, no, I'm starting at a moderate 50p, and then we'll figure out where it goes from there. Okay, so we know you've been busy. You've and your lovely wife had a baby who's now 14 months old, amazingly and unbelievably. I remember, let's see, when you started the podcast, were you single?
No.
No, so you early days.
Yeah, it was fairly early days because Jules and I met December 2019 at a cheese event in London, and then 4 months later we were living in the manor house in Devon, lockdowning together. And you know, we're both a little more mature in terms of a couple coming together, and it's just so much easier. Like, do you like me? I like you. Okay, let's do this. Very good. And so there's no kind of like farting around in terms of like courting like in the old days. It's like, yeah, okay, let's be a couple. And yeah, so we just sort of got on with it. So by the time, what, third, was the first podcast October 2020, I think. So, yeah, we've been together for like sort of 10 months, I suppose, by that point. But man, just now, like trying to think back to the COVID times, it's almost slightly hard to believe. I think not because it was a long time ago, but just because things have thankfully gone back to, for most people, some people are terribly still struggling with like long COVID, you know, but for the majority of people, life has effectively turned back to normal in that regard, that I think it's the case that I just don't want to think about it, because those are really, really tough times for lots of different reasons. But of course, the great thing that came out of it was this podcast. And actually, in many ways, I think that cider and smaller cider, artisanal cider, craft cider, has benefited from that time of people seeking and searching a bit more, buying local, and not just going down the pub and having their usual pint or whatever it may be. So I think that there have perversely been some benefits. But yeah, it's I forgot what the question. What was the question? That was it. Yeah, it's yeah, it was fairly kind of early days, I suppose. But yeah, now been living just outside Bristol for the last couple of years, but looking to move back up to Hereford, you know, the area that I'm from originally. But it's very boring. Don't talk about this on the podcast, about the troubles of interest rates and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, we haven't managed to buy a house just yet. Although we found somewhere to rent up here in the Shire, so we're going to move back, be close to my family and close to all the cider legends, the Olivers, the Little Pomonas, the Ross and Wise, etc. So yeah, fun times ahead.
So this is the first time you and I have been in person in the same room as opposed to on Zoom. And I love the fact that the first thing you said to me when you saw me was, "You're taller than I thought you'd be."
Yeah, I thought you were going to be a midget. Like, because it's hard to gauge like on camera, but I don't know, just the sort of the, maybe you've got a short back and long legs. I don't know. Maybe like you're like a daddy long legs. I don't know. But yeah, man, you're taller. Are you taller than me? You're 6'2", 6'3"? What are you? You're 6'3"? Yeah, man, you're a tall guy. So that's a good thing. Like you towered over Martin. That's great. Like you kind of body slammed him. That was fantastic. But actually, the first time that I saw Martin after the lockdown, because obviously I knew Martin beforehand. He worked at the my local pub where I lived in Bristol. And so I'd met him loads of times. But then the first time that I saw him, like whatever it was, 6-9 months later afterwards, like, man, you look taller as well. Maybe I just think that everyone's really tiny. I don't know what it is, but yeah, you do, funnily enough, look like the person down the camera. Is there anything about me that is about my physical appearance that has surprised you? Be kind.
First and foremost, your mustache flares out more than I thought it did. So, props to you for that. And then I didn't think you were short, but you were taller than I thought you'd be. Yeah, I guess it's a thing. Zoom maybe takes off a couple inches instead of a couple pounds.
You know, they say that like when you're on the TV that it adds, like, is it 6 pounds or 10 pounds to you, something like that? Maybe, yeah, Zoom makes you lose 6 inches. Sounds a bit weird. So yeah, no. Minus. What's that? Oh dear. It's great. So you're doing a bit of, you're getting to hang out with all of it. Very sadly, or rather wonderfully, Martin was able to be at the little do that we had here in Herefordshire. Grant and Jay and Sula and little Wren are up on the beautiful island of Skye, just right now celebrating Jay's 60th birthday. Bloody hell. She's not a cougar. Imagine that. 60-year-old Jay, sorry, I'm gonna stop saying that. Jay's dad's 60th birthday, so wasn't able to come down. But you're gonna be catching them, aren't you? In a few days' time. So this is very cool that it's good that you're like interviewing us individually as well. So you get to hear what we really think about each other rather than just like, oh yeah, we're on screen, yeah, we like each other. That Grant, what an a-hole. Come on. And Martin, like, I don't actually like him in real life. It's not true. It's just, you know, We just do it for the money of the show and the fame and the notoriety. That's mostly what it's been all about. So, yeah, it's a cool thing. So, what are you looking forward to most about seeing the other two guys?
I like that I'm interviewing you, and somehow you're turning it back on me the whole time. First of all, I've known Grant for a while, so I've seen him in person before. When I flew in, Martin picked me up at the airport. It was the first time I'd ever seen him, and met his lovely wife, Hannah, and spent some great time with them. And they're just a blast, as you would imagine. I think if fans of the podcast hear Martin on the show and they think that guy's crazy with his laugh and he's always cutting jokes, he's like that in real life. That is him to a T. We're not getting a performance. That is him all the way through. So I really enjoyed that. And, you know, you're very as earnest and as informative as I think anyone would expect as well. So that's a nice thing. And I think it's one of the pluses of the podcast is a lot of times people are performative on these things and you guys are just real, which I think is why people can connect with it more. So now let's turn a little bit to cider, because things have happened. We've been out for, I don't know, 15, 16 months or so, but what has been going on both for you as the ciderologist? What have you been up to? And then what are some things, movements, changes that have happened over the last year or so in cider that you've seen that you're excited about?
Good questions. For me, I don't know. It's still the usual mix of random writing, talking, teaching, tasting, and training. Mostly in the UK, a little bit of international, although now with gorgeous daughter, the desire and the opportunity to be away from home doesn't present itself quite so much or in such an appealing fashion. So yeah, I have to be a little bit more sort of selective. What are the sort of the highlights? As ever, CiderCon, I did get the opportunity to go to CiderCon, Chicago, world's biggest cider event. Anybody, if you're not in the USA, and especially if you are in the USA, go to CiderCon. There is no event like it in terms of the energy, the dynamism, the opportunity to learn, meet people, taste. It is just absolutely, absolutely fantastic. It's so enriching for me and gets me the opportunity to catch up with my US cider friends. So that was great. Continue the bit of work and things I do with Norway. So many interesting things happening in the Norwegian market. The Italian cider scene has really started to blossom. There is now, it's called like the Italian sort of Pomelier Association. So actually a grouping of advocates rather than makers that have come together to try and champion the drink in Italy and the makers of Italy, because there's a lot of apples that are grown in the north. I do believe that sort of at the early part of the 20th century, like 100 years ago, there were loads and loads and loads of orchards, and it was Mussolini who decided to like chop them all down and to place all the emphasis into wine as being like Italia's sort of national drink. But of course, you know, Italy's such a big country and lots of different sort of provinces and regions that go from quite cool, almost alpine in the north all the way down to sort of real hot in the south. Interesting one, the island of Madeira, Portuguese island out in the Atlantic Ocean. They have a heritage of growing apples and making cider that goes back, well, as long as people have been there, which I think is about 600 years. And they've sort of, as many of these provincial bits of Iberia do, they suddenly realize that they've got a food or drink that might have some value in it. And so they pump a load of money into it. Good for them. They've created a geographical indication around Madeira cider, and they hosted a competition. I wasn't able to go, unfortunately, this year, but maybe next year. But I was at an event called Cider World, which is this big event, big sort of mostly European event in Frankfurt. And there was one producer there, something Moscardinia, I forget the name, but it was, it had been barrel aged in a Madeira wine barrel. And then it had gone through a nice little second fermentation. That might be the nicest cider that I've tasted this year, possibly. So from a random little island in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. So that was a pretty cool thing. Otherwise, gosh, I don't know. There's all sorts of things. There's NICA, the Nordic International Cider Awards, is taking place in Riga, Latvia this September. Again, I'm not personally going to be heading to it, but again, it's just another showcase of the awesomeness of of cider from the sort of Northern European area. We hosted the Cider Salon in Bristol just a few weeks ago. The Cider Saloon. Thank you, Scott. Get it right. It's been such a while. And it was as good as ever. And we had the benefit of an amazing contingent of North American producers, the Cider Institute of North America, CINA, which is the organization that coordinates all the sort of the technical expertise of cider making in North America. They coordinated a group of cider makers to come over, and I hosted them and showed them around Herefordshire and into Somerset and at the Cider Saloon itself. So shout out to, let me get them all in, James Creek Cider House, Albemarle Cider Works of Virginia. We had Blake's of Michigan. We had Presqu'ile from Michigan. We had Bowman's from Oregon. We had the Seattle Cider Company as well. And shout out to Nick Gunn, Super Cider Consultant, as well. And also joining was Angry Orchard and Eden Ciders too. So yeah, it was a blast to have, just to show them around because they're good people. And to as always, sharing that sort of knowledge and that expertise and understanding with the UK cider scene. And yeah, it was good fun. So it's been, it's busy. Life is busy from the cider front. In terms of other things have happened, dare I mention the T word, tax. I know there's no escaping. I know we've only got like 20 minutes to talk about. I'm going to spend 17 minutes talking about tax. Big tax changes. I'm trying to think where we got to the last time we talked about tax. Whatever I was talking about, it has just been implemented. So cider now in the UK is taxed by the percent, by like to a decimal point, by the percentage of alcohol, which so means on average, cider is going to attract more duty than it used to do. There is also an increased duty discount for producers, for smaller producers, which, the increase and the offset, they're supposed to balance out a bit. But I think it remains to be seen, if you grow a little bit bigger, that it might actually cost you a bit more. And certainly the sort of the fiddliness of it has definitely increased. That only started on the 1st of August, so it's still... There's lots of people who are very confused. I think everybody's very confused as exactly how that looks and what it means. So, yeah, I'll hold fire, people, for the next opportunity to chat just to see what it was like. It's quite interesting. Otherwise, looking forward, for me personally, I'm not just me, Jules and Etta, we're all off to New Zealand in November, which is very exciting, where I used to live. I'm going to go and do some work at the New Zealand Cider Awards. I'm going to, New Zealand Cider Festival, beg your pardon. I'm going to chair the New Zealand Cider Awards ceremony. I'm going to do a couple of tasting sessions and things and go and hang out with some old friends. It's great. This will be the first time I've been back to New Zealand for 5 years. It'll be really interesting to see whether there's been any. I know that there are some new producers, cider makers who didn't exist 5 years ago, or they were early days and I didn't have the opportunity to taste them. So it's going to be really interesting to see what the sort of market and the scene kind of looks like. And then, I don't know, just seeing what next year kind of looks like. The desire, I think, to try and bring a little bit more work to Herefordshire. If any of the listeners are interested in having a tour of Herefordshire or the Shire, drop me an email, gabe@theciderologist.com for all of your cider tour needs. How about that, producer Scott?
If you didn't put shameless plugs in this podcast, it wouldn't be the Neutral Cider Hotel. Okay. Now, since we haven't had a chance to review many ciders, I thought it would be a nice chance for you to maybe shout out one or two standouts that you've had over the last year or two, and maybe one or two you found a little more challenging than you had anticipated. You're not slagging them, but just like, I had high hopes for this, and it was a little more acidic than I thought it would be, which is one of the three things I can say about ciders. It's either tanniny, acidic, or has a nice caramel leather flavor.
Wow. Now you'll put me on the spot. I'm trying to think of all the ciders that I've tasted in the last, I'm trying to think from a disappointment point of view. I don't know. I think this is part of the thing, is that the quality of cider today is such that it's quite hard. It is generally quite hard to get a bad cider, which means that when something does pop up with a fault, then it is sort of tricky. I mean, I'm very discerning with my taste, Scott. So obviously, I tend to not go for any rubbish. I'm genuinely trying to think on the spot as to what have I tasted that hasn't sort of come up to scratch. I might have to park that for a minute. In terms of what's been good, oish, there's so many to choose from. The sort of pet gnat selection from Nightingale down in Kent was particularly interesting when I took a group of Canadian Quebecois cider makers there back in the spring. They were pretty awesome. Likewise from Kentish Pip, their Foxwot Plus and their sort of Pinot Noir champagne style cider was particularly awesome. And then today we've just been tasting the Two Orchards champagne method that's made by Ted Duane, who's Scott is going formidable. Ted Duane from Mumford & Sons is the bassist, and yeah, he and Freddie, who's the tour manager, they've made this full-on champagne method cider that's very good. I presented that on Sunday brunch, and it was very well received there. And then, you know, out west, the usual suspects of the Olivers and the Pomonas and the Ross and Wise continue to do their things. Just because you can doesn't mean you should is a bottle conditioned cider from Mr. Tom Oliver that he's right when he says that it does epitomize kind of for him what Herefordshire cider is all about. And I would tend to agree. It's just got all this real spicy, leathery, but a little bit of sweetness because it's been sort of keyed, but not like crazy keyed. And that bit of sparkle, it's super good. It really is. So those have been massively enjoyable. The Perrys that are coming from Hex down in Somerset, not famed for being sort of traditional Perry country, but they planted up some pear orchards about 20 years ago. Those continue to be really good in small batches and sort of silly cheap. They've been really enjoyable. And yeah, gosh, I don't know what else. Just too many to choose from. Maybe not the best, but the most surprising cider was my own. A cider that I can genuinely be proud of, rather than just sort of, you know, getting by with sort of going, ha ha ha, it tastes of sausages or smells, ha ha ha, of actual poo, you know. This one, last year's 22 Harvest, blend of about 50% browns and 50% a sort of greeny, yellowy, mild, bittersweet type apple. I don't know, White Jersey or something like that. But the browns with the nice acidity and the fruitiness together, it's like actually made a real nice cider. We've got a bottle downstairs, Scott. That's the next cider we're going to taste. So you'll have to give your opinion next time you're speaking into the mic. So yeah, that was definitely the most surprising moment I'd say of 2023 so far.
Okay, so we've kind of talked about what you've been up to. We talked a little bit about your work and ciders you've had. Give me, you know, we're aiming to try and start something up again, but it's open-ended as to when. It could be a few months, it could be longer, but give me your outlook, given what's going on in the cider world right now with taxes and structures and things kind of getting back to normal, but, you know, some people talking about recession and things like that. I know makers are a little nervous at times. Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's slow. So give me your outlook of the future, say for the next year for cider.
Yeah, it's a good one. There's an uncertainty in a way. I suppose, you know, I think what's starting to happen is, you know, we've talked about it so many times on the podcast that there's such great, amazing divergence of different types of cider, of which on the one hand is to cider's great advantage that there are so many different, you know, types and styles. I would certainly say that from that big bottle, or even not necessarily a big bottle, but, you know, spontaneously fermented, they continue to gain traction because the consumers of spontaneously fermented beers and natural wines, not to say that they're impervious to some of the financial challenges which are out there for ordinary people. You know, here in the UK, it's starting to come down a bit, but we've had crazy inflation and interest rates. Everything is just expensive. So everyone's felt the pinch a little bit. But the people who are interested in buying those interesting drinks, they continue to do so. And it just feels that cider is starting just to creep. And it's never going to be like explosive. It's just starting to creep into the awareness and the mindset of those kinds of drinkers. And so for anybody whose business model is entirely based upon that, that's a good thing. But that's a pretty rarity here in the UK. You know, those big bottles act as a flagship and an opportunity to sort of draw people in. For anybody whose business model is about people drinking good cider down the pub, it's still a really, really tough time. You know, from pre-COVID, the number of people who are going down the pub, it has not recovered. And maybe it won't. You know, maybe that continual shift of people buying at retail and buying from the shop and drinking at home, maybe that will, you know, which has grown so much over the last 30, 40 years, it's exacerbated a little bit more. So I don't know. I think what has been interesting, having spoken to the likes of Albert from the Rossmore Cider and Perry Company, that actually keg, and in his case, the old keg conditioned cider, now accounts for a significant percentage of their sales, way more than I thought or appreciated. And for me, you know, I seem to remember some conversations, and by conversations, some from Grant about the role or importance of keg cider in terms of it sort of getting into the more broader public consciousness. Yeah, having a great cider that's still easy drinking on tap, I think that, you know, that still has a really significant role to play. And maybe we're now starting to see it become through a little bit in a little bit more of a niche way. So it's for anybody who's a food and drink producer, it's still a bit of a tricky time just because of the economic climate. But I think that if you are making a slightly higher value product, then there are still people who are willing to kind of pay for it. So yeah, I don't know. There's as ever, Scott, I'm an optimist, but I have to be because like my job's on the line as a result of it. So I'll have to be the beerologist one day if it all goes wrong. Heaven forbid. Nah, I'm only joking. I'd never do that. It'd be terrible, wouldn't it? Terrible.
You have to be an optimist for your made up job, and you're otherwise, what are you doing? All right. I know you got to get back to your family here, so I'm going to wrap this up and bring it back to your family, which is you grew up, I'm sure, most of your life you thought, someday I'll get married, someday I'll have kids. And I'm really curious to know your take on fatherhood, maybe what you love about it, and maybe what you're still adjusting to.
I mean, no matter how many times it happens, getting woken up at 10 past five in the morning is going to continue to be a challenge, and you're tired and maybe that makes you grumpy or whatever it may be. But when, and it is at this point with a baby who's, well, she's not a baby, she's quite literally toddling now. And when she's on the bed, when you're half asleep and she unprompted kind of comes and gives you like a little kiss and then goes pat pat and goes hello, you know, it's really hard not to love the little bugger, you know. It's I don't know, the it's just amazing to see the synapses fire and her little brain just growing new words, copying, mimicking things. We did a bit of baby sign language with Etta from an early age show. She was able to communicate a bit sort of without verbal gestures on certain things, you know, of mood and temper and things that she wanted. And just, oh, it's just very, very cool. Like I suspect any parent you've ever spoken to, when you say, what's it like to have kids? They go, it's exhausting, but it's totally worth it. And in the grand realm of things, that's right. But it doesn't get into the nuance of emotion of what it's like with these little people to see them. Just already there's kind of, I'm mostly terrified actually of her turning into a teenager, because just turn into a teenager, blah, 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 talk like that, and I hate you. But also then you got to deal with all the hormones and just, you know, looking after the mother, okay, like them turning into an adult. I know she's only just over one, but I'm already terrified of her turning into an adult. But No, it's great. I always kind of wanted it, so I'm very, very, very glad, obviously, that of Cheese bringing me and Jules together, and her wanting to cut off my moustache, which was her opening gambit to me at said Cheese event. You know, that she said, do you ever get the feeling, do you ever get the temptation, you know, when you're like on top of the Eiffel Tower and you want to jump off? Well, do you ever get the temptation to, like, you know, just snip off your moustache? So I was like, no! Come on, have a drink. It was a good opening line. So, yeah, it's, I don't know. You just roll with it and do kind of the best you can and try and remember, have a vague semblance of what your life was like before, but it goes fast. That's the thing, is that the days are long, but the years are fast, and that's months and years are fast, and that's definitely sort of coming to the fore. So yeah, it's lush. What can I say?
All right, two things. I think the reason why she asked you to cut off your mustache was because she was debating whether to date you or not, and maybe that was a deal breaker. So that's one. And two, I know you, I've seen you, so I know you're an amazing dad. And so I'm going to give you one more chance to say what you love about being a dad, because most of what you said was what you did. So here's round two of all the things you love about being an awesome dad, which you are.
Thanks, Scott. That would have been great. What do you love about being a great dad? Well, it's really hard, isn't it? It's really shit. To answer number one, Jules has not insisted on me cutting off the mustache. Apparently, it was just bravado. So fair play. What do I love? I don't know. The fact that it's possible to see, you know, physically in her appearance and already in a little bit of trait, some of the things that have been passed on from you and from oneself, and from Jules, and just sort of seeing that sort of coming to life is a pretty magic thing. And, you know, the thing that really got me into Cider and Perry was that sort of link and connectivity with forebears, you know, picking those thorn pears on my granny's old farm that I knew that my granddad had made. And, you know, whether she likes it or not, I'm obviously going to entrench Etta into the ways of the Cider and Perry. Maybe she will make it. And maybe she will tell her kids that old grandpa Pop Cider was into this thing and did this. And maybe they will make it. And just, I like the idea of that legacy. And in terms of people, and what I would love to one day is plant some trees, of course, physically into the ground, because they have the potential, especially if it's a pear, to certainly outlast me. They say plant pears for your heirs, but to outlast Etta, maybe Etta's children, maybe even Etta's grandchildren. You know, some of these peri pear trees are probably up to 400 years old. So, yeah, I like the concept of legacy there. But yeah, you know, for all of the challenge and the feeling of everything is the abiding feeling is just wanting to ensure that your child is just happy, which is kind of good, because it reminds you that, well, that's what you need to do for yourself as well, is just try and be happy. And, you know, obviously everybody has financial pressures because it is financially kind of challenging time, but maybe in terms of all other kind of needs or wants or desires, is just do what makes you happy and enjoy that, whatever that may be. And maybe that's drinking some more good cider, possibly.
Well, Gabe, it's lovely to see you. Thanks so much for taking the time. I'm gonna let you get back to your family, but looking forward to more conversations, and love you, bud.
Thank you, my boy. Thank you so much for being here. It's absolutely amazing to see you in the person. And yeah, what great times. Let's go drink some more cider and sunshine. Love you too. Take it easy.